Now, let me welcome this next guest back to the show. It's been a couple of years since we've had this gentleman on, and I am such a fan. Let me tell you, Luis Cejuelas was hired right out of college to shoot for National Geographic, and he created images around the world for 18 years, and his work has been praised for his ability to bring humanity and wit to complex science stories, and he has carried that over into his filmmaking. Now, he has made some of the most powerful, alarming, and visually striking films of the last 15 years. He created the Oceanic Preservation Society with Jim Clark in 2005, and their first film was The Cove, which won the Oscar. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor, be prepared. It's pretty intense. It's a very unflinching view of a dark subject. And then they made one of the most inspiring and scary films I have ever seen, bringing light to the world of endangered species in Racing Extinction, which is a movie that I have been praising for years since the last time he was here. His film, The Game Changers, examines the health benefits of plant-based diets, particularly on elite athletes. And now there is a new TV series. And the Academy Award team, the Academy Award-winning team behind The Cove, has a seven-part series on the future of food. It's reframing our insurmountable global threats to solutions that are right on our plate. It's called Food 2.0. What a pleasure to welcome Luis Cejuelas back to SiriusXM. Louis, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. Yes, thank you so much. It's good to hear from you. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Great to be back.
Before I dive into it, and again, I'm such a fan of your work, but let me begin by asking, how are you? How's your family? How are your loved ones? How are you getting through this time?
There's parts of it that are a struggle, but there's parts of it that I really enjoy. I think this is given everybody, a chance to, hit the big pause button and try to figure out like what we're doing wrong. I think everything, to me, everything points back to animal agriculture. The reason that we're in this, sheltered in place problem that we have right now is because, somebody was. Well, I know that there's going to be a lot of controversy. I know if I say
Of
this, but
course.
really, it's well,
All the science
that.
indicates that.
One thing we can agree on is the coronavirus is caused by bats. And I've been to China. I've been to the markets there that caused SARS and Guangzhou, and they actually eat bats
Yeah.
for because there's something called Zhenbu there, where the belief is that if you eat the animal, you'll get the qualities that it has. So a bat can see at night, and so that if you want to improve glaucoma or your night vision, they recommend bats. They actually have you can. So if people can Google it at home, check out, back done, back shit. And that they actually eat bat shit because they think that they're going to improve their night vision.
Yeah.
It's so
Yeah, I mean,
that's why we're in this situation. It's this
yeah,
batshit crazy idea.
I've never even been to a Chinese wet market. I just saw the film Contagion, but I agree. And over the course of a lifetime, an average person in the West eats about 10,000 animals, which can create a cascade of environmental threats with, of course, many problematic health consequences. And studies show if one 10-year-old child shifts to a plant-based diet, over that 10-year-old child's lifetime, they'll prevent 245 tons of carbon dioxide emission, save over 3 million gallons of fresh water, preserve 14 acres of natural habitat, and probably live 7.8 years longer and reduce your healthcare costs. So we know the many selfish benefits, to say nothing of the benefits for our planet. But in the last time you were on the show, we were talking about Racing Extinction, which is still one of the most important films I've seen in my life. And you really exposed the dark world of wildlife trafficking and wet markets and extinction. And that film was all about telling the world to take this seriously, even linking the wildlife trade to human health and the threat of future pandemics. So no one wants to be proven right on stuff like this, Louis, but you were. And looking back on it, what are your thoughts on all of it now? I mean, can our species course correct, or is it already too late?
Well, I think we can. I mean, like you point out, I think I probably spent a decade talking about, the benefits of alternative energy, plant-based diet, how it's going to help the environment. But I don't think anybody's going to go out and buy an electric car or a Prius to save polar bears. I think, with the last film we did, The Game Changers, I think we struck a nerve that because we've zeroed in on what gets people to change, you know, where you can create this massive social change. And that's where people are pretty selfish. We point out the benefits, say, of a plant-based diet. And yeah, there's going to be this huge cascade of environmental upgrades when anybody does that. But about half the people in America, about half the men in America have erectile dysfunction. That can largely disappear with a plant-based diet. About 80-85% of the diseases that we have, the chronic diseases we have, the biggest killers, heart disease, diabetes, prostate cancer, by extension, breast cancer, can be reversed with a plant-based diet and lifestyle change, simple lifestyle changes like, you know, doing some more exercise, the social support. I'm doing a film right now with following the work of Dr. Dean Ornish, who is a guy that first like 43 years ago that you can actually reverse heart disease. Back then, 43 years ago, people thought, well, you have to have a surgical intervention or drugs. That's the only way you can have an impact at all on heart disease. And he proved that you could reverse heart disease. Now, when we were doing Racing Extinction, or sorry, the Game Changers, he said something that really, you know, perked my interest. He said he's going to be trying to reverse Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's is on track to be our most deadly disease and our most costly disease. And it's the disease that we fear the most, because when you lose your memory, you lose everything. And he actually has a, it's called the PMRI, the Preventative Medicine Research Institute, right down the street from where I live. And so I've been going there over the last year, and it's probably talking a little bit about it out of turn, but it's working. It's on early stage Alzheimer's patients. It looks like you can start to reverse. It's too early. The study's not done, but it looks like it's working. That, you know, it gives new hope to a lot of people.
And these are Alzheimer's patients who have shifted to a plant-based diet and have seen positive results.
Oh yeah, correct.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable to see people come out of this fog. Again, the study's not done. There's about 8 cohorts that need to be done. I think we're starting, or Dean is starting, cohort 4 next Monday. But it's very exciting, and you know, the advantages are just so. I've been to the blue zones where. You know, there's 5 places on the planet where people live the longest, like you mentioned, without chronic diseases.
Right.
You know, Okinawa, it's called the land of the mortals, Ikaria, Greece, which is called the island where people forget to die. And there's actually one in Loma Linda, California, about 60 miles east of L.A., where about half the population is Seventh-day Adventists. And so you go to their version of Whole Foods there. The Loma Linda Market. They don't even have a meat counter. They have like a faux meat counter, but you know, and they have like animal milk, but it's on the bottom shelf mostly. But in this, if you go to the church there, and I'm not that much of a religious guy, but if you go to the church there, it's like you see like 80 and 90 year olds skipping down the sidewalk to church like kindergarten kids going to school. It's like a scene out of that movie Cocoon. It's you know, they have this. They have a gym there. I'm not sure what they're doing right now, but when I went there in late last year, there's about 300 people there that were 80 years and older. There's one guy at like the parallel bars, like flipping around like a gymnast.
Yeah.
So yeah, whole foods, plant based diet, better for yourself. We did this in the Game Changers. We did this one experiment. It wasn't a clinical study, but we just took 3 healthy, young, college age athletes. Like they weren't super athletes, but they were, you know, probably, you know, I guess they're probably, you know, fairly virile. But we put this device on them. It's called a Ridge Scan. It measures nocturnal erections, and we sent them to bed with this thing. So it's basically a device that it's a computer that straps on your leg, and there's like these 2 little, like a band that fits around the base of a man's penis and one around the head, and measures nocturnal erections. The guy will have about 6 to 7 nocturnal erections throughout the evening, just not even thinking about wet dreams. It's just your body keeping blood going to a very important organ. And we sent them off to bed after they put this on themselves. And the average duration erection time with a plant-based diet was 350% longer, not in size, but in duration of 350% longer duration erection and a 10.4% harder, bigger erection. So guys, you know, forget the polar bears.
Wow.
It,
if
it'll
that's
help your
not a
sex
yeah,
life.
I mean, listen, appealing to I mean, if appealing to people's own longevity and health care and decency won't work, then appeal to their vanity. By all means, appeal to the male ego. Good God, it's inspiring. But I want to ask you again about the Blue Zones you mentioned a second ago in that town outside of L.A. I know that the Blue Zones are regions of the world where people live the longest, like into their 90s and even 100s with very little chronic disease. But just to confirm, the distinguishing trait that they all have in common is that it's largely plant-based diets. Are there other factors that the Blue Zones share that contributes to this longevity of the people?
Yeah, about 95% of their calories come overall from a whole foods, plant-based diet. Whole foods is, you know, as close to the source as you can get. You know, Coca-Cola and Oreos are vegan, but it's not, they're not healthy. but there's other pillars. You know, they exercise. Not you know, they go to the gym, but they also exercise because it's part of their spiritual practice. Let's say, or like in Sardinia, they're tending their gardens. They're not using mechanical devices to cut their lawn. They're walking everywhere. They're not taking cars.
Right.
There's a lot of social support. People live longer when you have a community. And they take time off to relax and to meditate. It's basically, those are the Blue Zone principles, by the way, align perfectly with what Dr. Dean Ornish is doing with his program. You know, his four pillars are whole food, plant-based diet, exercise, social support, and meditation or relaxation.
Right.
They have all that in the Blue Zones. Plus, I think they drink like two drinks on average a day. So there's a few other things, but basically that's it. Just keep life simple, relax, eat really well, and get exercise.
I'm curious, was there a, like, you know, in your life, was there a moment or an experience that first inspired you to develop this series on the future of food?
Oof, boy, it goes back a long time. I mean, you know, the journey for me becoming vegetarian or vegan was way too long. In 1986, I did a story for Fortune magazine on the biggest independently owned cattle ranches in America. And there's one in Oklahoma that was so big they had their own slaughterhouse. And I know now why they say that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, there wouldn't be people eating very much meat. It's just, there's what they do is they put this captive bolt. It's basically like a pneumatic gun to the head of a cow, and it's supposed to kill it instantly. But there's one cow in particular, I remember, it didn't die. They stripped off its skin, and it's basically winding its way like a through this meat plant, and they're carving off bits of it. And this animal's hanging upside down with its skin ripped off, and it's looking at me. I noticed its eyes were just locked on mine, and as it went around the corner, it turned its head to look at me. And I thought, okay, I can't be part of this. But I still felt you had to eat animal products. So I stopped eating animal products right then. And I thought, well, I'll just eat fish because they're less sentient or intelligent. And then when we made the Cove, this is like, oh, I don't know, it's 25, 30 years later. I was, so my son still is a professional fisherman. So I ate a lot of fish. And he would send me like enough fish so I could have a freezer full of it. I had a huge freezer down in my basement. I had, you know, fresh tuna, well, not fresh for tuna, but tuna from the ocean, like, you know, three times a day sometimes. And when I did the Cove, one of the things that we do in the film is we took a hair sample for mercury. Mercury is the most toxic non-radioactive element in the world. Mm-hmm. There's no reason it should be in your body. It's a very dangerous thing. And so I took a hair sample. I took a hair sample from the Deputy Minister of Fisheries, and we had it tested. And I thought, well, at the same time, we'll send in my hair because I was eating a lot of fish. I was kind of curious how, you know, high my mercury levels were. His were 8 times higher than the base level was considered too high. Mine were 44 times higher. And I was just shocked because I realized I had to change what I was, you know, the symptoms are, I had a lot of symptoms, very achy joints, especially in the shoulder, short-term memory loss. There was a lot of things going on. And as soon as I stopped eating fish, they all disappeared. But the transition, though, was when this all happened about the time that we were in L.A. for the Academy Awards, and I met my first vegan, this woman, a clothing designer by the name of Rebecca Mink. I was eating with her mm-hmm. lunch, and she said she was vegan because she's ordering, you know, off the menu at the restaurant. I said, "You're vegan." I said, "What do you eat?" And she said, everything else, all protein originates in plants. And that was really the kind of the start of it. And then when I was doing Racing Extinction, everybody says, well, this is, you know, Racing Extinction is about the Anthropocene. This is the sixth mass extinction on the planet. It's caused by us. We're the one generation, the generation left that can actually solve this problem. And there's several drivers of extinction, but by far the biggest one is food. The way that we get the way that we raise animals, it's not just bad for the animals. It's, you know, it's the biggest cause of freshwater pollution, one of the biggest causes of greenhouse gases. Like you mentioned, all that whole litany of issues.
Right.
But people want to know, what's the solution? If you want to change the planet, if you want to, you know, fix the world, the best thing you can do is change what's on your plate. Go start heading towards a whole foods, plant-based diet. It's better for you. It's better for the planet.
Yeah, and heading towards, you know, like I find very often carnivores get terrified at conversations like this. It can be a process. You don't have to give up everything you love right away. Just try to eat less meat. Move towards a more plant-based diet, and you'll find that it gets easier and easier to do. Before I let you go, Louis, and it's such a pleasure, please, please join us anytime. I'm such a fan of everything you do, and how you manage to make it so entertaining is a marvel to me. But in our final minute, I'm just curious, what have you found to be the more effective arguments for winning over somebody who is less than willing to adapt to a more sustainable lifestyle?
Well, I'm doing this film right now with the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. It's like, how do you find joy in a world of sorrow? And a lot of it is, it's not thinking about yourself and what you need. Try to think about the person you're talking to and what they need. What could they be helped by? As soon as I start talking to somebody about a plant-based diet, they say, I can't do it. Yeah. You know, I'll mention, like, to tell me about your father or your mother. And it turns out more often than not, that,
yep.
you know, they have heart problem, diabetes. And I said, well, yep. you know, you can reverse that. You don't have to go, you know, like Dr. Dean Ornish says in The Game Changers, genes are your disposition, but they don't have to be your fate. And I think when people start to realize that there's something in it for them, it's a way stronger argument, you know. I've been on this, you know, the environmental front for, you know, I don't know, quite a long time. I'd say since I started working at National Geographic in 1980, I did a story on the most, on basically garbage and recycling when there was only one mandatory recycling community in all of America. But I think that when people start to see, you know, I called that story urban ore, like what we were throwing away was valuable. We didn't talk so much about, you know, we talked about the problems, but the solutions are there.
Right.
It's about reframing the argument. That's the key.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Luis Cejuelos is the Oscar-winning man behind The Cove and Racing Extinction. The series is, of course, called Food 2.0, and then you're also working on the film Loiser, The Last Place on Earth. Please, please, be with us anytime. I would love to talk to you even more and keep tabs on all that you're doing. It's more important than ever, and I'm really, really happy that during this pandemic time, we can counter-program by talking about the stuff that actually matters and affects us all. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, John. Cheers.